Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. NFL playoffs are here. It all kicks off with Super Wild Card Weekend. Action gets started with a Saturday doubleheader followed by a Sunday tripleheader. And for the first time ever, a Wild Card Monday. How about that? 3 days of action, six games, an epic long weekend. It's the road to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 56 at SoFi Stadium starts here. MJD knows a thing or two about SoFi Stadium. He's a smooth operator joining our show today.
Thank you. Yeah, I figured, you know, I'd bring a little, you know, laughter to this somber Tuesday that I'm having.
Are you, somber Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm a little salty right now.
Why?
What's wrong?
No, Rams, we were right there. Okay. You know, we had the 2 seed. We won the division. Uh-huh. But it just wasn't the way. We didn't want to go the
Jaguars
way.
Are playing well.
Hey, Matt Murray, yeah. Those Jags. How about those Jags,
listen,
baby?
Listen, we're always excited about the Jags.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Anytime Indianapolis comes down to
the Rams. Saints fans, tweet MJD. What's your handle?
Oh, yeah, the Saints know what's up.
Yeah,
I always go down to New Orleans when we go down there and beat them. They'll go to the Super Bowl.
I'd love for Saints fans to let you know how they're
please.
Feeling.
I love gumbo, though, and I told you the rest of my favorite restaurant down there is Neo. So
Saints fans, how are you feeling about the Rams and what MJD just said? Let us know at GMFB. Kyle Brandt, Peter Schrager are here, all smiles. Let's do this. It's time for the lead block.
Lead block.
Lead block.
Take a look at the matchups for Super Wild Card Week, and we have a hell of a show for you guys. Scott Pioli joining us, Dan Hansis. We'll talk coaches. We've got angry runs, of course, on a angry Tuesday, not a somber Tuesday.
That's somber.
And it's set. Tricks, you see this? What do you think?
I think Saturday playoff football, we have two great AFC games. Like, I'm not leaving the couch. Those two games, and it starts at 4:30 Eastern.
It's amazing. And then, what else do we have? We have Sunday action, KB.
Oh, my God. Where do you even pick from this delicious menu? So, Eagles, Bucks. All the way to Cardinals, Rams, not leaving the couch on Monday night. That's 2.5 straight days of sweatpants and pad thai, and I'm in for it.
All right, let's start off with the NFC East champion Cowboys. They will host the Niners. Head coach Mike McCarthy spoke yesterday about what this game means for quarterback Dak Prescott.
I'm happy for our whole football team, but I'm excited for Dak. I mean, this is you can't deny what, you know, where he was, you know, last year and coming back the way he has. And you know, he's a true leader of our football team, and but you know, same breath, you know, want him to go out there, and I know he will compete and have fun, and you know, and you know, everything will be attainable. We just got to, you know, play to our strengths and stay true to that, and he's obviously a huge part of it.
They have the number one offense in the land. Regular season. Regular season is over. We're talking postseason. We want consistency. There's high expectations. It should be the number one offense in the NFL, and that certainly has been their strength, leading the league in points and yards per game. They've been lighting up the scoreboard, sure. I don't know that they have a signature win and moment this season, MJD. I'm being negative Nelly here on a Tuesday.
It's not you, it's them.
Do you feel like the Cowboys are a Super Bowl squad?
Okay, so I'm not, how can I say this? I think the Cowboys have the talent and the ability to do it, but they haven't put it all together. Does that make sense?
Okay.
When you look at their wins, right, it's been against the NFC East. You lose to the Raiders at home, then you get beat by the Cardinals at home. The two playoff teams you play, you can't do anything on offense, and you're giving up big plays on defense. Why is that? I've always questioned. You can't run the ball. You haven't run the ball well or consistently in these big games. Dak Prescott has struggled in these big games, right? And as much as you want to say, yeah, they beat the Eagles, well, the Eagles rested everyone. Mm-hmm. So you scored 50 against a team that rested everybody. There's a lot of those guys will obviously be backups or special teams guys. And then you beat the Washington football team. You scored 50 against them, and they all had COVID, right? So it's just like, what team are you really? Are you the team that puts up 50 against the Eagles and the football team, or are you a team that struggles against the Raiders at home and the Cardinals at home, right? Where Kyler comes out and says, man, I always beat the Dallas Cowboys. They're not that good to me, right? So which team are you? Mm-hmm. And so for me, when you get in the playoffs, especially here, and the team that you're about to face in the Niners, You better
You just
be playing
saw the
well.
Niners. You just, I mean.
Oh, I've seen the Niners a lot. It's not. That's the team you didn't want to see get in the playoffs because of what they do and how they play.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're the Rams, I guess.
Let's not. It's just as early.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's early right now.
It's a lot. They always beat them. I don't think the Cowboys are a Super Bowl team. Not now. Like,
maybe with the upside of a title game team, but no. I've been asking all season, and my whole life I've seen talented Cowboys teams with famous players who sell jerseys. Is this one any different? And I'm trying to look for a reason if they're different. They just went undefeated in the NFC East for the first time since 1998. They haven't done that. No team has done that since 2004. The Cowboys just finished the season with the most takeaways they've had since 1987. And they set an NFL record with 22 players scoring a touchdown. That starts to be some actual tangible evidence that maybe they are different. What's not different is that they're going to have to beat Brady or Rodgers or maybe both, or Kyler for that matter. I just wonder if they're a Super Bowl team, they better have a Super Bowl quarterback. Because when you watch this game, this season, their best punch is Dak being unbelievable. I think the running game is not great. I think the defense is kind of hit or miss. I think that the way that we come in here on a Monday and start a show being like, oh my God, the Cowboys beat the Bucs or they beat the Packers, is that Dak had 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. I really mean it. I think that's the way to do it, because this defense, the opportunistic and everything, Rodgers doesn't make mistakes. It doesn't happen. You're not going to get a pick six off him. Brady, don't see it happening in late January. I think the only way they do it is a true duel. If you think back this season, week one, they almost beat the Bucs. They played with the Bucs. Dak dropped back 60 times in that game. The time they beat New England, threw for 445 yards. That's their quality wins and almost win. It's just Dak, 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 Dak. It's not Zeke, and it's not Micah Parsons having to pick six. I think the only way they're a Super Bowl team is if Dak goes unconscious over the next month. I really do.
Yeah, you mentioned that they're going to have to beat Rodgers. They're going to have to beat Brady. They might have to beat Kyler. Like, right now, calling it like it is, like, are the 49ers favored to you over the Cowboys in their own building? Like, I look at the 49ers coming off this thing, and it's like, they might have to be Jimmy G, and they might not get past Jimmy G. And I look at all the players, they're stars. I mean, Parsons is a star, and Lamb is a star, and I think Diggs is a star, and Dak has star qualities too. But at the end of the day, like, Kyle Shanahan's going to have those Niners ready to play. And let me show you who the man that I'm looking at for on Sunday and all his ups and downs as a coach in this league. And now, let's see the man. You've heard of the man in the black hat. How about the man in the black mask? Like, is that guy ready to go head-to-head with Kyle Shanahan, who's been drawing up plays in his sleep all night? And it's not just him. It's going to be Kellen Moore, who's getting head coaching buzz. It's going to be Dan Quinn, who was the head coach when Kyle Shanahan was an offensive coordinator in Atlanta for all those years. I look at the coaches, because I'll tell you what, they have all the players, but this coaching staff has to show us that they can win against these other coaching staffs in big spots. Look, you could look at the winning percentages. I'm sure McCarthy has a better career winning percentage than Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. But right now, coming off what the 49ers have done the last few weeks, I think a lot of people think that Kyle has those guys dialed in. And I look at this coaching staff. Can you get your boys up to go? Because they are one of the highest paid coaching staffs, one of the most decorated coaching staffs. Even throw in Fossil, the special teams coordinator. They've been there. They've done that. McCarthy, all eyes are on you. In the crunch time, are you going to be able to outmaneuver Kyle Shanahan in a big spot? I think that's what I need to know before I say they are a Super Bowl team.
There's just little reason to think they can get far based on the body of work we had. And I actually know the slate is clean. These records, it's so funny how much you put on regular season records. Everyone's 0-0. Nothing matters right now. But when you do look at what they've done against the top-tiered competition, I'm not even talking just playoff teams. That's a staggering statistic in and of itself. 1-4 against teams with 10 or more wins this season. They lose to the Bucs. We all know that. They probably face them again. Let's see how that goes. Chiefs, Raiders, and Cardinals, their lone win coming against the Patriots. The path isn't going to be easy. They've had an excellent season. I do think there's something to be said for leaving the regular season with a positive, get right, good game. I happen to think they protected Dak really well. I'm looking at Bosa coming to town. I don't know, love that matchup. I think that's something to look at. So offensive line play was good in this NFC East matchup. I know it was against, you know, that competition as far as the line of scrimmage is concerned. But Zeke was running at a 4.8 yards per carry clip. Did Dak give you any confidence in their run game? Because that's what it's going to take to help Dak out.
He did have a nice burst in that game. We've been waiting on this for years.
Yeah.
I don't see Ezekiel Elliott beating the Packers or Buccaneers. I've waited for a long time.
Do you trust Shanahan more
than McCarthy?
Or just like what he's saying? Is it like, are you tinkering between these two teams like Peter's saying?
I think what's fascinating is, Peter, you were right. And I'm saying, well, they're going to have to be Brady and Rodgers. You're like, hold on a second. How do they even know they're going to get to Brady or Rodgers? What do you think, Maurice?
Well, the thing is this. Anytime that you have to play the last game of the season to get right, that's a problem.
Okay.
That's a problem because it's really down the stretch of December you want to start playing your best football, right? You want to kind of be rolling. If you look at what the Niners have been doing, they've been playing their best football. The Rams, before the Niners, even that was a great game, they've been playing really good football down the stretch. A lot of these teams, the Packers, really good football down the stretch. The Cowboys, not so much.
Yeah,
and so it's like
rougher.
Up and down for them. So that's where, yes, you had to have a get-right game. You threw five touchdowns against the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But why? Why did you have to? Why did you have to play that whole game? Why did you have to do all that, right?
That's a good question. At GMFB, we'll be breaking down these super wild card weekend matchups. 3 days of games, and we've got Tom Pelissero joining us now. Tom, welcome to the show. Good morning football to you. The head coaching search is on for a few teams. Any interest in the Cowboys assistant coaches, Dan Quinn, who did a terrific job. Of course, huge plays being made by this Cowboys defense. How about Kellen Moore, too?
Okay, these are two names you are going to hear for virtually every head coaching opening in this cycle. Let's start out with Dan Quinn, the former Atlanta Falcons head coach, took them to a Super Bowl, has shown that he knows how to build a culture. He enters the process with the Denver Broncos as one of, if not the favorite for the job. Worked with George Payton years ago when the two of them were together in Miami. The Jaguars also put in a slip for Quinn. The Jaguars already interviewed Kellen Moore. That happened virtually on Friday night. Kellen Moore, a younger guy, just 33 years old. He's known as being very smart, creative, a guy that everybody there seems to like. Just has a lot to learn about the big picture. He was a backup quarterback in the NFL, only in his fourth year right now in coaching, but certainly an intriguing guy who also has a slip in from the Broncos. A reminder about the procedures here for interviews during the playoffs. Only assistant coaches who have a bye this week, such as Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, can interview now. So can coaches who are not in the playoffs. Guys like Dan Quinn, Kellen Moore, other coaches who have games this week cannot interview until next week. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the answer to Schrager's Shanahan versus McCarthy. It's Kellen Moore, the lefty, the last lefty left in the NFL for a couple of years until now, of course, and see if he can maybe dial something up. Hey, Debo threw a touchdown pass, a trick play. Get CeeDee Lamb out there working some magic, chucking the ball downfield. Thank you so much. Tom, talk to you throughout the show. Angry Runs is on the way, but NFL Game Day morning, they are your pregame home for Super Wild Card Weekend. The crew's there both days, getting you set for Saturday's doubleheader, Sunday's tripleheader, everything you need to know heading into every postseason matchup, complete with live reports, updates from around the league, our best reporters in all the biggest places. NFL Game Day morning, Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, live right here on NFL Network. Colts lost to the Jags on Sunday. We're still thinking about it.
Duval.
We're still thinking about it. Are we in or are we out next? Are we in on Carson Wentz? Is that the question?
Might be.
Did anyone see Andrew Luck?
All right, right now is a game we do called We In or We Out, and We Out is a key statement because we're going to talk about some teams who are out of the playoff picture. I will say the statement, and you guys are going to tell me whether you agree or disagree with this statement. 2 weeks ago, I worked sidelines for a Cardinals-Colts game on the NFL Network, and Carson Wentz threw the Colts on his back, came out of Arizona with one of the gutsiest, most impressive victories of the entire NFL season. The Colts were primed for a playoff ride. And they lost at home to the Raiders and then on the road to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are nearly three score underdogs. Guys, here is my statement. The Indianapolis Colts are the most disappointing non-playoff team of the 2021 season. Kyle, are we in or are we out with that statement?
That Colts season will be instantly forgotten. Of all Jonathan Taylor did, he's not going to win Offensive Player of the Year. It's going to go to Cooper. It's just gone. Mm-hmm. And yet, I'm out.
Okay.
Because they went down to Jacksonville and on the Any Given Sunday thing, and maybe they thought their bleep didn't stink and they got beaten. Imagine if they had lost just because their coach called a weird timeout at the end of the game that the other team was trying to give them. I think it's the Chargers. Not only the way that they lost in this bizarre game that all they had to do was tie and they're in. Something we were talking about yesterday. I just cannot believe the optics right now watching football in week 18 that Justin Herbert is not going to the playoffs and Ben Roethlisberger is. And I know it's the ultimate team game and everything, but like Herbert looked like Superman in the fourth quarter of that game and he's going home because they could not win a game. I would have liked to see the Chargers overhand right, their big knockout punch in the playoffs, try to slay some one seed. We will not see it because of this craziness on Sunday night. I think it's the Chargers even over the Colts.
Yeah, I don't think I kind of talked about this on our meeting or given the guys. I'm going to say I'm out. We out.
We out?
Yeah, it's the Browns. All the hype for the Browns.
I haven't gone to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, everybody did. It was like they're going to be the playoffs. They played the Chiefs really well. They did all these things, and they was just like bleh. Like what? Like there was nothing there. Baker Mayfield didn't get better. You traded Odell Beckham Jr. The running game wasn't that good. Well, it was really good against the Packers, but then you started to throw the ball.
Right.
Then it was really good the next week, and then you started to throw the ball. It's just like they were just so – there's so much hype around this team of what we expected, all the additions, all the different things. Myles Garrett being up for Defensive Player of the Year at one point, leading the league in sacks, all these things – and then nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really expect much from the Colts, to be honest with you.
Really?
No, not until November. It's like, oh, okay, they're, you know, they're running the ball well, they're doing some good things. But the hype wasn't there like it was for the Browns early in the
year. That's a good point.
I figured the Colts would make the playoffs, but I at no point this season thought the Chargers wouldn't make the playoffs. Like, they, even their bad losses, and I got mad at everybody for using chargering as a thing. Like, it's over, it's a clean slate, Brandon Staley's going for two, so we should have shared notes. I know, we should have shared notes. Even just the pure fashion of how the Colts lost this past week and the Chargers makes it not the Colts. Like, at no point was that a heartbreaking years off your life. It was just, nope, you don't have it, Carson. You don't have it in the big game that we need to make something happen to leave this season, to get into the playoffs. It was a playoff game and he didn't show up. But with the Chargers, everything you're saying about Herbert, the chance to go and, like, do something against Kansas City down the stretch, which you've seen you do before, the chance to possibly play the Super Bowl in your backyard, new fan base, growing fan base, invigorated fan base, that was a huge bummer.
Yeah, and so I think Chargers and Colts would be – Browns were, like, preseason favorites for everyone. It's amazing. 14 teams make the playoffs, but going into, I think, Sunday's games, there were still 20-something teams that had a chance. Colts and Chargers, of course, were two of them, will not be playing playoff football.
The lead.
Lead block.
All right, again. Massive matchup. This is a huge matchup on Sunday night of Super Wild Card Weekend. It's Ben Roethlisberger. He's live. He is playing. Those Steelers having to go into hostile territory to Kansas City to take on Patrick Mahomes. And those Chiefs, these two teams met back in Week 16, so not too long ago. Andy Reid said yesterday, the playoffs, though, as we all know, a whole different animal.
We look forward to playing Pittsburgh. We know that they're very, very well coached, great organization, and a good football team. And the playoffs, it really doesn't matter what you've done before. When we played, it's about now. And everything's a little faster in the playoffs and more aggressive. It's just how the nature of this thing and how it works. So we've got to make sure that we get ourselves right.
All right, that's a man who has lots of experience. That is a team that has been to the Super Bowl the last two seasons, and they're coming in as the two seed in the AFC. So whether it's Pittsburgh, which Andy Reid just talked about for their Sunday night matchup, or for the rest of the conference, or really just Kansas City themselves, what do you guys think is the biggest obstacle to the Chiefs' third straight AFC title?
You know, everyone's picking the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl that I'm seeing on TV, and it's like, well, it's the Chiefs. They've been there. They've done that, and they don't have the home field. They don't have a bye. The Titans are the one seed. So here we have the Chiefs that everyone is crowning as, you know, they've been there, done that. They've also been there and been done by other teams this season that they're going to face. Take a look at this. Look at some of the teams that are in the playoff picture and how the Chiefs fared against them this year. They got blown out at home against Buffalo on Sunday Night Football in one of the games where there was a big delay at halftime because of weather, and the Bills came out like, we're still going to beat you. They go to Tennessee and it was 27-3. That was in week 7. And then a couple weeks ago, going throw for throw with Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes in the second half scored 3 points and didn't do much. Like, these are the teams that they have to face moving forward. Now, the Steelers, they beat by a lot 2 weeks ago. We get it. Like, it's going to be a tough one for the Steelers to go into there with the, I guess, with what they've got on offense. I don't know how they're going to be able to keep up with the Chiefs. But after that, you tell me that the Chiefs are playing the Bengals and it's a slam dunk Chiefs? No. Titans? Bills? No way. Even the Patriots. The Patriots have beaten the Chiefs in recent years. Here's my point. These teams aren't scared of the Chiefs. The Chiefs are not the big, bad Chiefs anymore. They're not the mighty Chiefs. Now, yes, you respect the fact that they've won two straight conferences. You respect the fact that they have been to the AFC Championship game 3 years in a row. But a lot of those games were in Arrowhead. A lot of those games, like, the Chiefs right now, they didn't blow the world on fire on Saturday.
It
the
feels
Broncos
different.
Had them. Like, the Broncos had them. You have Kelce limping, you have Hill limping, you don't have 31 Williams. Like, I don't think the Chiefs have this aura of invincibility right now. So the obstacle for me is that you don't walk into the building 10-point favorites just because you wear that jersey and you've got Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. All those teams you're going to face, they've beaten you. And they've beaten you handedly this season.
To me, it's the team that kind of mimics them a little bit. It's the Cincinnati Bengals is the team that I'm most, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm most terrified of, right? You have young, fast receivers that can play. Jamar Chase, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, running back in Joe Mixon. You have a quarterback that can make every throw and is not afraid to make every throw in any situation. And so if you think about it, they remind me more of the Chiefs when they were making their run a couple years ago, where it was like, ooh, like the Chiefs are pretty good. The Bengals aren't playing any games with anyone. This is the game. This is not even the best. This is not even the most disrespectful thing. I got to say disrespectful because it was a 3rd and 27.
Yeah.
And they played. The Chiefs played press man, and he just threw a fade to Jamar Chase. Like, look, if you want to keep pressing my guy, I'm gonna throw you the ball. They're not afraid of anyone, and they believe. And it's always scary when you have a young, inexperienced team in the playoffs. That was the play there. A young, inexperienced team in the playoffs. Confident. It's always scary because they don't know. They don't know that they don't know. It's kind of like a baby snake. You guys ever heard that? If you ever get bit by a baby snake,
what happens?
I'm sorry.
They put all the venom in you.
Okay.
They don't, like, an older snake is going to give you just enough to set you down. Baby snake doesn't know that. He's just like, look, I'm going to give you everything I got. And that's what the Cincinnati Bengals are to me.
Baby snakes.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, but
don't ever get bit by one.
Disgusted and
so mommy snakes, like, you got to hold on to some of that poison. Yeah. Maybe another adversary down the path.
Yeah.
Baby snake.
I'm going to give it all to you right here.
Yeah.
And then I'll worry about next time.
That's oddly relatable. I think in the AFC, there's no one who anybody is afraid of. Peter, why are you smirking?
Nothing. Go on.
Because you relate, too. No one relates. Never mind the relatable. Hold on. I got sidetracked.
God.
No one is scared of anybody. Here's how I feel. Peter, you went on to something. Yeah. No one's afraid of the Chiefs. In my opinion, so you got the big three, okay? Mahomes, does he scare you? There's a lot of really talented quarterbacks, and he's still really special. Kelce, sure, but there's some other really good tight ends. What I'm scared of as a defense and a coordinator is Tyreek. Like, he still, I think, is the really unique one. And Tyreek right now is not Tyreek. If you watched him last week, he got banged up in pregame warmups and had a heel issue. He was barely out there. It didn't look like him. Some Chiefs fans were actually mad that he was out there at all in this game, and I get it. There's another thing with Tyreek. When is the last time on this program or any other program, even when he's healthy, that we've seen Tyreek chuck the deuces or backflip or do any of that stuff? It hasn't really happened. Now, here's the deal. He's had a very productive year. Like, the numbers are awesome. 111 catches, 1,200 yards. 111 catches for 1,200 is not the Tyreek that we have come to see. Tyreek is 80 catches for 1,200. It's huge plays. It's bombs away. He hasn't had a play of over 50 yards, which is his specialty since week one. So, and we're going to do some of these shootouts against whoever it may be, Buffalo or Cincinnati. I want that guy doing the shootout thing. I remember all these playoff runs they've had. There's always this crazy play by Tyreek, whether it's Indianapolis coming in back in the day or whoever it may be. Tyreek will make the Tyreek play where it's like, we have number 10 and you don't, and he's the only player in the league who can do that. I just haven't seen that guy, and I don't know if he's banged up physically or if the defenses are adjusting, but if we're going into this and there's no juggernaut and there's no front runner and we're going to have to win these games 38-35, like, I think number 10 needs to be number 10, and he just has not been as explosive this year, and now he's banged up. So I think that is a difference maker, and I hope we don't have to see it play out that way.
It's a great point. They're still a great team.
They
could be the best team in the AFC, but the gap, to Peter's point, is significantly smaller. It's so heavy, AFC, top to bottom here. We saw them beat up on teams like the Raiders and the Steelers. We've talked about that. But, I mean, without Aaron Rodgers, it was 13-7. Like, they've struggled against top-tier teams. That was against, you know, Love and Company. Yeah. So it's those games that are kind of weird. Do you guys feel, like, when we're going to obviously make our choices for who wins these games on Friday, is it tougher than other years, like big time?
This game is tough to Pittsburgh. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, like, as much as we know respect what Pittsburgh's done, a great T.J. Watt game and Najee Harris has 150 yards. I mean, can you guys see this happening? It's. I think of all the games this weekend, and it'll have the fewest people pick the upset. And, I mean, I don't see how I could do it. MJD, do you?
I feel like the offense of Pittsburgh has to go down the field. All this dinking and dunking, throwing quick slants and bubble screens, you can't do that against Kansas City. You got to go and put the pressure on them early. You got to take shots down the field,
score quickly. They ain't going down the field, buddy.
And that's not what they do. Yeah. So it's just going to be tough for me to see them go down there and be able to, you know, to go into Kansas City and win.
The only team that they won't face is the sixth seed. So I'm trying to think who the sixth seed is, because that would mean that that's who Tennessee is going to play if they upset them. Whatever. Mm-hmm. At some point next week, they're going to beat the Steelers, I think. And then the following week, it's going to be either Buffalo, Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. It's on.
Or, yeah, I mean, these it's are teams that can, like, can like come in, or New England, who can come in there and can give them the business. So I'm not scared of them anymore.
Yeah, but I don't know. But is it because other teams leveled up? Because you can't say that, because all these teams have had bad losses against bad teams in the AFC, even though, or have Kansas City come down to them? What I mean, what you're saying about Tyreek is like they're less dominant. But which way is it? You know?
I think they've come down. Like, do we feel about the Chiefs like we did last year or the year? Absolutely not. And yet they're like, what do you want from us? We're still sitting here. Mm-hmm. We're going to the playoffs now. It's not going through Arrowhead this year. So it's that's a different deal. They're not the one seed, but I feel very comfortable saying I don't think this Chiefs team is as good as the last couple of years.
At Good Morning Football, at GMFB, with your thoughts, Chiefs fans. I mean, I think Chiefs fans are pretty level-headed about this and how they're feeling right now. We'd love to hear from you, of course. Hit us up at our handle as we welcome in Tom Pelissero to talk a little Chiefs here. Their offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, his name always pops up after the season when it comes to interviews for higher positions. And he got an interview request from the Broncos for their head coaching vacancy. Is there a top guy for Denver right now?
Okay, Cowboys defensive coordinator Dan Quinn is one of, if not the front runner for the Broncos head coaching job as they start out this process. Quinn is a guy who has built a culture in the past. He brought the Falcons to the Super Bowl. Also has a previous working relationship with Broncos GM George Payton going back to their days together in Miami. But Denver is casting a wide net here as they begin this search. At least 8 interview slips went out to current assistant coaches for interviews for that head coaching job on Monday. Among them, Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, I'm told, is going to interview with the Broncos on Saturday. He also has interviews scheduled with the Jaguars, going to interview with the Bears, a hot candidate there. Patriots defensive coordinator, de facto defensive coordinator Jerod Mayo, also considered a strong candidate in Denver. And also, of course, Eric Bieniemy, as you mentioned, somebody who has interviewed for a lot of different jobs in the past. He has deep ties in that state, a former Colorado University star as well. Some other names that got interviewed slips from the Broncos on Monday include Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon, Rams offensive coordinator Kevin O'Connell as well. Okay.
Thank you so much for that list. We are circling and highlighting those names as we try to fill some of these vacancies across the league. After this, Tom Pelissero, we'll have Scott Pioli joining us, giving us the front office perspective. There's some GM seats available, so he'll break it down. Coaching positions. We'll chat Wild Card Weekend with Pioli. Back-to-back days.
We now welcome to the show a man who has won 3 Super Bowls as the Vice President of Player Personnel for the New England Patriots. He's worked with the Chiefs, he's worked with the Falcons, and now he works alongside us. Let's welcome to the virtual breakfast table, Scott Pioli.
Hey, what's up, Scott?
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Good morning.
I'm noticing the Herschel Walker Georgia Bulldogs behind you. I'm noticing some good moments from the Broncos behind you. Let's go, though, to some of the coaching news from yesterday. Man, you know very well, Dolphins former coach Brian Flores was revealed of his duties. I was shocked on set. I know a lot of people at home were as well. As we look towards the future, let's listen first to what owner Stephen Ross had to say about the decision.
I've been looking at this over 3 years now and watching the organization grow. And I think an organization can only function if it's collaborative and it works well together. And I don't think that we were really working well as an organization that it would take to really win consistently at the NFL level.
All right, Scott, what was your reaction to this move and how confident are you that Brian Flores will be back in the NFL soon?
Peter, my reaction actually was I was surprised. I was also really disappointed for Brian. Again, you mentioned I met Brian and hired him as an intern in 2004 at the Patriots right after he graduated from BC. So I know Brian personally. I know him professionally. I love the guy. You know, he's a friend. and I was really disappointed for him. I also know Stephen Ross well, and I know Stephen well enough to know those words that he said in terms of collaboration and communication, something was wrong. People were not getting along. He had to make a choice, and he made a choice. When I look at Brian Flores moving forward, the reaction to this has been interesting because so many people are disappointed and surprised on Brian's behalf. I really think if Brian wants to be a head coach this year, he will have that opportunity. I also think if he waits a year or two, he will have that opportunity. I think the ball is in his hands. And it's interesting. Sometimes coaches and GMs, when they get fired, they may want to step back, do something to take some time to reflect. But Brian is young, full of energy. I could also see him jumping in if the right opportunity comes.
Yeah, Scott, you know a lot of people through your time looking ahead to Super Wild Card Weekend. The Niners will be facing the Cowboys, and in 2016, you were the assistant GM for the Falcons, where you both had Dan Quinn and Kyle Shanahan on their coaching staff. Now they go head-to-head in the playoff game. What can we expect from this week from both of them this weekend as they face off?
MJD, as you mentioned, I worked with both of these guys. I have a ton of respect for both of them for a multitude of reasons. They're both guys who really respect the game. They love the game, and they're both really smart. I love kidding Dan Quinn because Dan, you know, he has that defensive line coach look. He puts the hat on backwards. Everyone likes to mock him. He likes to play the role of maybe not being a smart guy. Dan Quinn is smart, people. Don't ever underestimate Dan. And Kyle Shanahan, quite honestly, is one of the smartest coaches I've been around. As I worked with him, he always reminded me of Bill Belichick in a lot of ways. Again, because of his background, because of the father coaching, but also because of his detail and his preparation. Here's what I do know, is both coaches have continued to grow since 2016. I know Dan Quinn is the defensive coordinator, but I'm going to love watching this matchup and these two fantastic coaches, you know, going against one another.
So are we. Scott, there is a steely gaze over your left shoulder coming from the great one, Muhammad Ali, that is capturing our eyes right now. And we can see it, and it's perfect because, Scott, there he is. You mentioned a couple weeks back that there's a rematch that could be compared to the thriller in Manila, Frazier versus Ali, Bills versus Patriots. The Bills won the last matchup in Foxborough. The Patriots went early in the season in Buffalo. It's all very exciting. How do you see this playing out, maybe being different than the first two fights?
Kyle, I mentioned the thrill in Manila because as soon as that game ended between the Bills and the Patriots, I immediately said, I can't wait to see the third one because I know there's going to be a third one, just like the thriller in Manila. And to me, it was interesting because game one up in Buffalo, right, that was an anomaly because of the circumstances, because of the environment and the way the game that they had to play in those conditions. Game two, a little bit more normal, and both teams could do the things that they are built to do. This weekend is going to be really interesting to me. I think we're going to have a fantastic football game. We're looking at the weekend. It doesn't look like there's going to be precipitation in Buffalo. It's going to be cold now. I'm seeing single-digit numbers. But both teams should have built themselves to play in the cold weather in January. And that's exactly what we're going to have Saturday night. And the Bills have brought in a quarterback who they thought could be a cold weather quarterback. The Patriots have built a big physical football team that's a January-type Northeast football team. I think this is going to be a heck of a matchup, and I think it's going to be different than the first two, but a terrific game either way.
Josh Allen, are you that cold weather quarterback? Great points all around, Scott. I want to talk about the Eagles and the Buccaneers, this game in Tampa Bay. There's a lot of this, like, cute media. Oh, he's got, you know, he's the Eagles, and it lives in his head between his ears. Is that a thing? You know Brady. You've been around Brady. Is there, like, a little extra chip on his shoulder here?
Kay, here's what I said. The people that are saying that the Eagles live in his head, I'll tell you this. Tom Brady is not a good landlord. So whoever's living in his head needs to get out because he's not going to leave you there for very long. Or if you live there, he's going to find a way to overcharge you. People don't live in Tom Brady's head. That's who he is. That's who how he is built. And to me, when we look back at that team, the Eagles, that he lost to, he's with a completely different team, with completely different teammates and a different coaching staff. Some of the things he does are the same, but then when we look at the Eagles, there's only 10 of the 53 players that were on that Eagles roster that are still there. Tom is not going to be facing the same team. He's not going to be facing the same coaching staff. So to me, the idea of people living or the past living in someone's head that isn't even relevant isn't really a thing, Kay.
Scott bringing it as always. We love the Georgia Bulldogs. They won the championship. Yep. Buck Ballew, Herschel Walker behind you. And Scott, we know you represent that state quite well as well. Thanks for joining us. We're going to be very busy with these GM and coaching hires. We're going to have you on throughout the next few weeks. Thanks so much, Scott.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your week.
Scott, do you want to come out to LA with us and wake up at 2 in the morning?
I've yes. offered myself. No one's invited me.
We're talking tacoing about a lot of things here today. Anybody want to talk about something else?
Sure.
I'm going to jump right in, if I can, my fellow hosts. I
just like say, at the taqueria, Peter. Get in there.
First one in there.
Got to. Awesome club, baby.
Go on, Peter.
LA, watch out. You know, we talk about all these quarterbacks on this show, and we tear them apart for their postseason records, and we tear them apart for their big game ability. And I think I just got to give some love to Derek Carr for finally making the playoffs and doing so with four straight wins to end the season. I asked our research department, and Rich Goldberg, our researcher, said, here's your list. I said, can I get the list of all the games started for quarterbacks in the league who have never played in a playoff game? And sure enough, there's Derek Carr. Now, wow. Fitzpatrick, we know, has played a lot more years in the league, and that's 140.
Yeah.
Carr, though, has more than 50 starts than Jameis. And, of course, Chad Henne with the Dolphins was a starter, but really isn't considered a starter anymore. Carr has played in 127 regular season games and has never started a playoff game. And had they lost on Sunday, I think this offseason would have been really interesting for Derek Carr. I don't know if the Raiders have to go into another season with maybe a new coach and then a new front office. Who knows what they win this game? I think Bisaccia has a really good shot to coming back.
Wow.
I think Mike Mayock has a really good shot to coming back. I think Derek Carr has a really good shot to coming back. Derek Carr went up against Justin Herbert, who was Superman on Sunday, and yet Carr went throw for throw, play for play, and I'll say this. I don't know how it goes against the Bengals. I can't wait to see Derek Carr in a playoff game. I'm happy for Derek Carr.
Me too.
He's one of the good guys of the league, and he's also one of the great ambassadors of our sport. I'm going to say this just to talk about it. Congratulations to Derek Carr. You made the playoffs. The rest of us, we can shut up.
Yeah.
Hey.
Awesome. Good job.
Yeah, Peter. Listen, I was in Oakland with his rookie year, so I'm very happy for Derek Carr and what he's been able to do there. I want to talk about the Bengals, not their offense, though. The defense doesn't get enough credit for what they've been able to do, the turnaround they've had. Let's just go through some stats here. 102 yards rushing yards per game. That's fifth in the National Football League. They're tied 11th with 42 sacks in the National Football League. Trey Henderson has 14 of those sacks. Give a shout out to another guy. The Bengals have three different players that have seven sacks a season. Sam Hubbard and Larry Ogunjobi, my dog. I see you, Larry.
Larry O.
Larry O. from the nose tackle, defensive tackle position, seven sacks. Look, they're just finding ways to make plays. And this is one thing you said, Peter. They held the Chiefs to 3 points in the second half of that game. That's what we don't talk about. They talk about a lot of other things, but the Chiefs offense and score a touchdown in the second half of that game. This defense is the reason, is one of the reasons why they're there. Yes, the offense is scoring points, but the defense, they're finding ways to create turnovers, and they're finding ways to hold teams from like scoring points. That's huge to me.
Yeah.
And they don't get enough credit for it.
Mm-hmm. No, no doubt. That you don't get here just because you got a cool quarterback and some receivers. Like, that's a full team, dude. They won the North. It's pretty awesome. Yesterday on the show, something came up organically. I'm just going to toss to it. We're talking a lot about the Steelers because the Steelers got into the playoffs based on some of the craziness that happened Sunday night. A couple different moments popped up in the show. Here's how it went down.
Never give up on the Steelers. You see that logo? Go to the logo. Go to the logo. Look at that. That is, might as well be the American flag as it concerns the National Football
America.
League. Don't ever give up on that. We tell you and you don't live.
That's Uncle Sam.
Listen to me. You see that flag over there? Don't give up on that. That's Uncle Sam. You salute that.
What are those sparkly things on the Steelers logo?
Somebody tell us. Those starbursts. The red, red, yellow, and green, whatever it is. Those things. There's only on one side of the helmet. As we know, the other side's black. I don't know what they're called exactly.
The U.S. Steel logo.
Okay, so Peter was kind of on it. Roughly 27,000 people have weighed in since that happened over social media. Steelers fans are looking to educate, and so are we. So these things right here, those starbursts, as I call them, those are actually called hypocycloids. Hypocycloid, that is a term from geometry.
Okay.
It has to do with curves and circles and radius, etc., based on all this stuff. Now, as Peter was in that clip,
That whole deal here is based on the Steelmark logo belonging to the American Iron and Steel Institute. It was a logo that originally that Iron and Steel Institute used and designed to teach Americans about the importance of steel, and we're going to build this country and this economy and Carnegie and all this great stuff. But what goes even deeper, there's a couple layers of this. So the three hypocycloids represent the three materials used to literally produce steel. So yellow represents coal, red, or as it originally was, orange on their helmets, was for iron ore, and the blue hypocycloid at the bottom is steel scrap. Now that's a great explanation of itself. However, with Pittsburgh, there's always more. There's also symbolic meanings of the hypocycloids. Lightens your work, that's yellow. Yellow means they're gonna make your life easier. Orange, and again it became red, brightens your leisure. Steel is gonna make your life more fun. And then blue widens your world, and the great American economy is gonna prosper because of this. That's the basic explanation. But it's also interesting because as we stumbled upon yesterday, remember, this is only on one side of the Steelers' helmet. So the Steelers are the only NFL team to have that logo on one side of the helmet. And it was done initially because they had this thing and they thought, I don't know if we're going to like this logo. I don't know if the people are going to like this logo. So they put it on one side as a sort of a half measure. Be like, let's just try it on one and leave a black on the other. Yes, especially since the member that Steelers helmets were originally yellow and gold. They wear them sometimes and it looked a little weird. So they wear it on one side. They go 9-5 that season, which back then especially was great. And also, people kind of liked the asymmetry of it. They're like, it is weird, and we're talking about it, that it's only on one side of the helmet, so let's keep it. And that is history. They will never change it. It's permanently one side. Once again, the word, guys, hypocycloids. Say it with me.
Hypocycloids.
And Pittsburgh, we love you and all your friends. It wasn't one of these like, how do you not know that? You work for football. They're like,
they
we got you.
Know,
yeah, they're like, we'd love to explain it to you. So, countless people being like, here's the deal. It's hypocycloids. And now we know, and now you know, as they head into their playoff matchup, hypocycloids. It's pretty cool.
U.S. Steel.
U.S. Steel. Never doubt Uncle Sam.
Probably never asked that question.
I don't know. I when you asked it, I'm like, I think I know. And then Peter was on it about the Steel logo, but explicitly it stands for all those elements and all those great intangible working class values. It's awesome.
Blue
like
collar.
The sparkle emoji, the glitter emoji. Sure. On your iPhone too as well. All right, at Gina Fee with yours. So I was watching week 18 go down and I'm watching this Jags team and they were like, let's go. And they rally and they do their thing. And then I'm watching the Texans with Culley and Mills, who looked incredible. Danny Amendola out there giving it all.
He's great.
These teams, and I'm like, why can't you bottle this up and be this in week three? Like, you have it in you, clearly, because your back's against the wall or you want to leave something on the field. And there's one team that I can say that is never in that situation where they're not giving. I won't name the teams that we've seen look lackluster, not all there, no juice this year, and it's the New Orleans Saints. Now, this season, I think embodied that this year more than any other. And I wanted to take a moment to talk about that. I don't want it to be forgotten because a late 49ers rally cost them their opportunity to go to the playoffs.
Shouldn't if you look it, at this, left it in their hands.
If you look at this list, they were uprooted from their home because of a hurricane, playing a home game in Jacksonville to open the year, took
which
their business
the
there
Packers.
Badly, by the way. They had to play down 21 guys on a Monday night against the Dolphins, thanks to COVID. So that game, we're not even going to go there. They started four different quarterbacks, both all-pro starting tackles, missed half the season. Michael Thomas, when is he coming back? Nope, misses the entire thing. Alvin Kamara was out for a key four-game stretch. Sean Payton missed a game due to COVID. A lot of teams face adversity. This team was still 9-8, a winning record, a Niners overtime rally away from getting in. To me, incredible effort. I don't know. It's the Cam Jordans. It's the Coach Paytons. It's the whatever it is to get this team to keep showing up despite rolling out Trevor Siemian and Taysom Hill and Ian Book and whoever, not having Jameis. And I think a lot of people might forget about it because it didn't culminate in a postseason spot. I'm going to remember this season.
I'm going to remember it, too.
That's a record. 58 starters is a record. I know the Titans dressed 80, I think, players, but 58 starters is, poof, boggles my mind.
I hope we never have to think of the Ian Book game again because it was unfair to everyone who is a fan of the Saints. And if they had won that game, who knows? Maybe they'd be playing right now.